Chapter 20. From the Steading. Rand had just begun thumbing tobacco into his short pipe when Laya put her head in at the door. Before she could speak, a panting, round-faced man, in red and white livery, pushed past her and fell to his knees before Rand, while she stared in amazement.
"My Lord Dragon!" the fellow burst out in a breathless squeak. "Ogier have come to the palace! 3 of them! They have been given wine and offered more, but they insist only on seeing the Lord Dragon."
Rand made his voice easy. He did not want to frighten the man. "How long have you been in the palace?" The fellow's livery coat fit him, and he was not young. "I'm afraid I don't know your name." The kneeling man goggled.
"My name? Barry, my Lord Dragon. 22 years, my Lord Dragon, come winter night. My Lord Dragon, the Ogier?"
Rand had visited an Ogier steading twice, but he was not sure of the proper etiquette. Ogier had built most of the great cities, the oldest parts of them, and still came out of their steading occasionally to make repairs, yet he doubted Barry would have been this excited for anyone else, less than King or Aes Sedai. Maybe not for them. Rand stuffed pipe and tobacco pouch back into his pocket. "Take me to them." Barry leapt to his feet, all but bouncing on his toes. Rand suspected he had made the right choice. The man showed no surprise that the Lord Dragon was going to the Ogier instead of having them brought to him. He left his sword and the scepter behind. Ogier would not be impressed by either. Laya and Cassin came, of course, and it was plain Barry would have run back as well, if not for the necessity of keeping his pace to Rand's. The Ogier waited in a courtyard with a fountain, its basin filled with lily pads and red and gold fish. A white-haired man, in a long coat that flared above high boots with their tops turned down, and 2 women, one noticeably much younger than the other, their skirts embroidered in vines and leaves, the elders considerably more elaborate than the youngers. Golden goblets made for humans seemed tiny in their hands. Several trees retained some of their leaves, and the palace itself gave shade. The Ogier were not alone. When Rand appeared, Sulin and a good 3 dozen maidens were crowded around them, and Urien plus 50 or more Aielmen. The Aiel had the grace to fall silent when they saw Rand. The Ogier man said,
"Your name sings in my ears, Randolph Thor,"
in a voice like rumbling thunder, and gravely made introductions. He was Hammon, son of Dahl, son of Morel. The older woman was Kovril, daughter of Ella, daughter of Sung, and the younger was Aerith, daughter of Iva, daughter of Aelar. Rand remembered seeing Aerith once in Steading Tsofu, a hard 2-day ride from the city of Kyrian. He could not imagine what she was doing in Camelon. The Ogier made the Aiel seem small. They made the courtyard seem small. Hammond stood over half again as tall as Rand, and broad in proportion. Kovril, less than a head, an Ogier head, shorter than that, and even Aerith topped Rand by nearly 1.5 feet. Yet that was the smallest difference between Ogier and humans. Hammond's eyes were as large and round as teacups, his broad nose nearly covered his face, and his ears stood up through his hair, tipped with white tufts. He wore long, drooping white mustaches and a narrow beard beneath his chin, and his eyebrows hung down to his cheeks. Rand could not have said precisely how Kovril's and Aerith's faces differed, except for lacking beards and mustaches, of course, and their eyebrows were not quite so long or thick, but they seemed somehow more delicate. Though Kovril's was quite stern at the moment, she looked familiar too for some reason, and Aerith appeared worried, her ears sagging. "If you will forgive me a moment," Rand told them. Sulin did not let him get another word out.
"We came to talk with the Tree Brothers, Randall Thor," she said firmly. "You must know the Aiel have long been water friends to the Tree Brothers. We go to trade in their steading often."
"That is quite true,"
Hammond murmured. For an Ogier, it was a murmur. An avalanche somewhere out of sight.
"I am sure the others did come to talk," Rand told Sulin.
He could pick out the members of her guard this morning by eye, every last one of them. Jelani blushed a deep red. On the other hand, aside from Urien, no more than 3 or 4 of the morning's red shields were there. I would not like to think I need to ask Anila and Samara to take you in charge. Sulin's tanned face darkened with indignation, making the scar she had taken following him stand out more. I would talk with them alone. Alone, he emphasized, eyeing Laya and Kassin. Unless you think I need protection from them. If anything, that made her more offended, and she gathered up the maidens with quick flashes of hand talk in what for anyone but an Aiel would surely have been called a huff. Some of the Aiel men were chuckling as they left. Rand supposed he had made a joke of some kind. As they went, Hammond stroked his long beard.
Humans have not always thought us so safe, you know.
His musing sounded like a huge bumblebee.
It is in the old records, very old. Only fragments, really, but dating from just after. Elder Harmon,
Kovril said politely,
if we may stick to the matter at hand.
This bumblebee rumbled at a higher pitch.
Elder Harmon, where had Rand heard that before? Each steading had its council of elders.
Hammond sighed deeply.
Very well, Kovril. But you are showing unseemly haste. You barely gave us time to wash before coming here. I vow you've begun to leap about like...
Those big eyes flickered toward Rand, and he covered a cough with a hand the size of a large ham. Ogier considered humans hasty, always trying to do now what could not possibly matter until tomorrow. Or until next year. Ogier took a very long view. They also thought it insulting to remind humans of how they leaped about.
This has been a most exacting journey outside,
Hammond went on, explaining to Rand.
Not the least of it discovering that the Shaidu Aiel had besieged Al-Kair Ainalan. Most extraordinary, that. And that you were actually there. But then you left before we could speak with you. And I cannot help feeling we have been impetuous. No. No, you speak, Kovril. It is for you I left my studies and my teaching to go running across the world. My classes will be in riot by now.
Rand almost grinned. The way Ogier normally did things, Hammond's classes would take half a year to decide he really was gone, and a year more to discuss what to do about it.
A mother has some right to be anxious,
Kovril said, tufted ears quivering. She seemed to be battling between the respect due an elder and a most un-Ogier-like impatience. When she turned to Rand, she drew herself up, ears standing straight and chin firm.
What have you done with my son?
Rand gaped. Your son?
Loyal.
She stared as if he were mad. Aerith was peering at him anxiously, hands clutched to her breast.
You told the eldest of the elders of Steading Tsofu that you would look after him,
Kovril marched on.
They told me you did. You did not call yourself Dragon then, but it was you. Wasn't it, Aerith? Did Aela not say Rand Althor?
She did not give the younger woman time for more than a nod. As her voice picked up speed, Hammond began to look pained.
My loyal is too young to be outside, too young to be running across the world, doing the things you no doubt have him doing. Elder Aela told me about you. What has my loyal to do with the ways and Trollocs and the Horn of Valyr? You will hand him over to me now, please, so I can see him properly married to Aerith. She will settle his itchy feet.
He's very handsome,
Aerith murmured shyly, her ears quivering so hard with embarrassment that the dark tufts blurred.
And I think he's very brave, too.
It took Rand a moment to regain his balance mentally.
An ogre being firm sounded much the same as a mountain falling, an ogre being firm and speaking rapidly. By ogre light, Loyal was too young to have left the steading alone, little more than 90. Ogre were very long-lived. From the first day Rand had met him, all full of eagerness to see the world, Loyal had been worried over what would happen when the elders realized he had run away. Most of all, he worried about his mother coming after him with a bride in tow. He said the man had no say in these things among Ogier, and the woman not much. It was all the two mothers doing. It was not beyond possibility to find yourself betrothed to a woman you had never met before the day your mother introduced you to your prospective bride and mother-in-law. Loyal seemed to think marriage would be the end of everything for him, certainly to all his wishes to see the world. And whether it would or not, Rand could not hand a friend over to what he feared. He was about to say he did not know where Loyal was, and suggest they return to the steading, until he came back. He had his mouth open to say it, when a question occurred to him. It embarrassed him that he could not remember something so important. To Loyal it was. "How long has he been out of the steading?"
"Too long," Hammond grumbled, like boulders rolling downhill. "The boy never wanted to apply himself, always talking about seeing outside, as if anything has really changed from what's in the books he should have been studying. What real change is it, if humans change the lines on a map? The land is still..." "He has been outside much too long,"
Loyal's mother put in as firmly as a post driven into dry clay. Hammond frowned at her, and she managed to stare back at him just as firmly, although her ears vibrated in embarrassment.
"More than 5 years now,"
Aerith said. For a moment, her ears wilted, then shot up and stubbornly back. In a very good imitation of Covril, she said,
"I want him to be my husband. I knew that when I first saw him. I will not let him die. Not from being foolish."
Rand and Loyal had talked of many things, and one of them had been the longing, although Loyal had not liked talking about it. When the breaking of the world drove humans to flee for whatever safety they could find, it drove Ogier from the steading, too. For long years, humans had wandered in a world that changed sometimes by the day, hunting that safety. And Ogier had wandered, hunting for the steading lost in the changing land. It was then that the longing entered them. An Ogier away from the steading wanted to return. An Ogier long from the steading needed to return. An Ogier too long from the steading died. "He told me of an Ogier who stayed out longer," Rand said quietly. 10 years, I think he said. Hammond was shaking his massive head before Rand finished.
"It will not do. That I know of, 5 have remained outside that long and survived to return, and I think I would know if more had. Such madness would be written about and talked about. 3 of those died within a year of coming home. The 4th was an invalid for the rest of his life, and the 5th little better, needing a stick to walk. Though she did continue writing, Dalar had some interesting things to say concerning..."
This time when Covril opened her mouth, his head whipped around, he stared at her, long eyebrows humping up, and she began smoothing her skirts furiously. But she stared right back.
5 years is a short time, I know,"
Hammond told Rand, while watching Covril sharply from the corner of his eye.
"But we are tied to the steading now. We heard nothing in the city to indicate that Loyal is here, and from the excitement we ourselves caused, I think we would have. But if you will tell us where he is, you will be doing him a very great kindness."
"The 2 rivers, Brand said. Saving a friend's life was not betraying him. When I last saw him, he was setting out in good company, with friends. It's a quiet place, the 2 rivers. Safe." It was now, again, thanks to Perrin. and he was well a few months ago. Bode had said as much when the girls were telling what had happened back home.
The Two Rivers,
Hammond muttered.
Yes, I know where that is. Another long walk.
Ogier seldom rode, there being few horses that could bear them, and they preferred their own feet in any case.
We must start out immediately,
Aerith said in a firm, if light, rumble. Light compared to Hammond. Coveril and Hammond looked at her in surprise, and her ears wilted completely. She was, after all, a very young woman, accompanying an elder, and a woman Rand suspected was of some importance in her own right from the way she stood up to Hammond. Aerith was probably not a day over 80. Smiling at the thought, a slip of a girl, maybe only 70. Rand said, "Please accept the hospitality of the palace. A few days' rest might even make your journey faster, and you might be able to help me, Elder Hammond." Of course. Loyal was always talking about his teacher, Elder Hammond. Elder Hammond knew everything, according to Loyal. "I need to locate the way gates. All of them." All three Ogier spoke at once.
"Way gates,"
Hammond said, ears and eyebrows both shooting up.
"The ways are very dangerous. Far too dangerous."
"A few days," Aerith protested. "My Loyal could be dying." "A few days," Coveril said on top of her. "My Loyal could be—"
She cut off, staring at the younger woman, lips compressed and ears quivering. Hammond frowned at them both, stroking his narrow beard irritably.
"I do not know why I let myself be talked into this. I should be teaching my classes and speaking to the stump. If you are not such a respected speaker, Coveril—"
"You mean if you were not married to my sister," she said stoutly. "Von Neil told you to do your duty, Hammond."
Hammond's brows lowered till the long ends hung on his cheeks, and her ears seemed to lose most of their stiffness.
"I meant to say she asked you," she went on.
Not hurriedly, exactly, not losing aplomb, but definitely not hesitating.
"By the tree and stillness, I meant no offense, Elder Hammond."
Hammond harumphed loudly, which for an Ogier meant very loudly, and turned to Rand, tugging his coat as if it had been disarrayed.
"Shadowspawn are using the ways," Rand said before Hammond could speak. "I have to set guards in the few I can reach, including the one outside steading Tsofu, plainly after their departure." These three could not have walked all the way from steading Tsofu after his last futile visit. "A bare handful. All of them need to be guarded, or else Murdral and Trollocs can come boiling out of nowhere, as far as anybody they catch is concerned. But I don't even know where they all are." That would still leave gateways, of course. Sometimes he wondered why one of the Forsaken did not pour a few thousand Trollocs into the palace by a gateway. 10,000 or 20. He would be hard-pressed to stop that, if he could stop it at all. It would be a slaughter at best. Well, he could do nothing about a gateway unless he was there. He could do something about the way gates. Hammond exchanged looks with Coveril. They drew aside, speaking in a whisper, and for a wonder it was low enough that all he heard was a buzz like a huge swarm of bees on the roof. He must be right about her having some importance. A speaker with a capital S. He had heard the capital. He considered seizing Saeddin. He would be able to hear then, and rejected it disgustedly. He had not sunk to eavesdropping yet. Aerith divided her attention evenly between her elders and Rand, all the while unconsciously smoothing her skirts. Rand hoped they did not inquire why he had not asked his question of the Council of Elders in steading Tsofu. Aelar, eldest of the elders there, had been very firm. The stump was meeting, and nothing so odd, so peculiar as to never have been thought of before, as handing control of the waygates to a human could be done unless the stump concurred. Who he was hardly seemed to matter to her any more than it did to these three. Finally, Hammond came back, frowning and gripping the lapels of his coat. Coveril was frowning too.
"This is all very hasty, very hasty,"
Hammond said in slow tones like gravel sliding.
"I wish I could discuss it with... well, I cannot. Shallow spawn, you say? Very well. If there must be haste, there must be haste. Never let it be said that Ogier cannot move quickly when needs require, and perhaps they do now. You must understand the Council of Elders in any steading may tell you no, and so may the stump."
"Maps!" Rand shouted, so loudly that all three Ogier jumped. "I need maps!" He spun around, looking for one of the servants who always seemed to be about. "For a guy shine, anyone." Sulin put her head into the courtyard through a doorway. She would be nearby, after everything he had told her. "Maps!" he barked at her. "I want every map in the palace. And a pen and ink. Now! Quickly!" She looked at him almost disparagingly. Aiel did not use maps. Indeed claimed not to need them, and turned away. "Run, Farder Izmai!" he snapped. She looked over her shoulder at him, and ran. He wished he knew how his face looked, so he could recall it for use again. Hammond appeared as though he would be wringing his hands if his dignity had been just a little smaller.
"Really, there is very little we can possibly tell you that you don't already know. Every steading has one just outside."
The first waygates could not have been made inside, with the ability to channel blocked by the steading itself. Even when Ogier were given the Talisman of Growing, and could themselves make the ways grow to a new waygate, the power was still involved, if not channeling.
"And all your cities that have Ogier groves, though it does seem the city here has grown over the grove. And in Al-Kair, Ra'in-Alan."
He trailed off, shaking his head. The trouble could be summed up by that name. 3,000 years ago, near enough, there had been a city called Al-Kair, Ra'in-Alan, built by Ogier. Today it was Kyrian, and the grove the Ogier builders planted to remind them of their steading was part of an estate that had belonged to the same Barthanas, whose palace now housed Rand's school. Nobody but Ogier and maybe some Aes Sedai remembered Al-Kair, Ra'in-Alan. Not even Kyrianin. Whatever Hammond believed, much could change in 3,000 years. Great Ogier-built cities had ceased to exist, some leaving not so much as a name behind. Great cities had risen that the Ogier had had no hand in. Amador, begun after the Trolloc Wars, was one, so Moraine had told him, and Chachin in Kandor and Shol Arbella in Arafel, and Falmaran in Shinar. In Arad-Doman, Bandor Aban had been built on the ruins of a city destroyed in the War of the Hundred Years, a city Moraine knew three names for, each suspect, and itself built on the ruins of a nameless city that had vanished in the Trolloc Wars. Rand knew of a waygate in Shinar, in the countryside near a moderate town that had kept part of the name of the huge city leveled by Trollocs, and another inside the Blight in shadow-murdered Malkir. Other places, there had simply been change or growth, as Hammond himself had pointed out. The waygate here in Camelin sat in a basement now, a well-guarded basement. Rand knew there was a waygate in Tyr, out in the great pasture land, where the Highlords ran their famous horse herds. There should be one somewhere in the Mountains of Mist, where Menethrin had once stood, wherever that was. As far as steading went, he knew where to find steading Tsofu. Moraine had not considered steading or Ogier a vital part of his education.
"You don't know where the steading are?"
Hammond said incredulously when Rand finished explaining.
"Is this Aiel humor? I have never understood Aiel humor."
"For Ogier," Rand said gently, "it has been a long time since the ways were made. For humans, it has been a very long time."
"But you do not even remember Mafalda Daranel, or Ankohima, or Undaran Kor, or..."
Kovril put a hand on Hammond's shoulder, but the pity in her eyes was directed at Rand.
"He does not remember," she said softly. Their memories are gone.
She made it sound the greatest loss imaginable. Aerith, hands clasped to her mouth, appeared ready to cry. Sulin returned, quite deliberately not running, followed by a fat cluster of Gaishine, their arms filled to overflowing with rolled maps of all sizes, some long enough to drag on the courtyard paving stones. One white-robed man carried an ivory-inlaid writing box.
"I have set Gaishine looking for more," she said stiffly, "and some of the wetlanders."
"Thank you," he told her. A little of the tautness went from her face. Squatting down, he began spreading maps right there on the paving stones, sorting them. A number were of the city, and many of parts of Andor. He quickly found one showing the whole stretch of the borderlands, and the light knew what that was doing in Camelon. Some were old and tattered, showing borders that no longer applied, naming countries that had faded away hundreds of years before. Borders and names were enough to rank the maps by age. On the oldest, Hardan bordered Kyrian to the north, then Hardan was gone, and Kyrian's borders swept halfway to Shinar, before creeping back as it became clear the Sun Throne simply could not hold onto that much land. Moredo stood between Tyr and Ilion, then Moredo was gone, and Tyr and Ilion's borders met on the plains of Moredo, slowly falling back for the same reasons as Kyrian's. Carlane vanished, and Almuth, Mosara, and Irinvel, and others, sometimes absorbed by other nations, most often eventually becoming unclaimed land and wilderness. Those maps told a story of fading since Hawkwing's empire crumbled, of humanity in slow retreat. A second borderland map showed only Saldaea and part of Arafel, but it showed the Blight border 50 miles farther north, too. Humanity retreated, and the shadow advanced. A bald, skinny man in ill-fitting palace livery scurried into the courtyard with another armload and Rand sighed and went on selecting and discarding. Hammond gravely examined the writing box that was held out to him by the Gaishine, then produced one almost as large, though quite plain, from a capacious coat pocket. The pen he took from it was polished wood, rather fatter than Rand's thumb, and long enough to look slender. It fit the Ogier's sausage-thick fingers perfectly. He got down on hands and knees, crawling among the maps as Rand sorted, occasionally dipping his pen in the Gaishine's inkpot, annotating in a handwriting that seemed too large until you realized that for him it was very small. Kavria followed, peering over his shoulder, even after he asked the second time whether she really thought he would make a mistake. It was an education for Rand, beginning with 7 steadings scattered through the borderlands. But then Trollocs feared to enter a steading, and even Myrdral needed some great purpose to drive them into one. The spine of the world, the Dragon Wall, held 13, including one in Kinslayer's Dagger, from steading Shangtai in the south to steading Kitchen, and steading Sanshen in the north, only a few miles apart.
"The land truly changed in the breaking of the world,"
Hammond explained when Rand commented. He continued marking briskly, though, briskly for an Ogier.
"Dry land became sea, and sea dry land, but the land folded as well. Sometimes what was far apart became close together, and what was close, far. Though, of course, no one can say whether Kitchen and Sanshen were far apart at all."
"You forgot Kantuan,"
Kovril announced, making another liveried servant drop his fresh armload of maps with a start. Hammond gave her a look and lettered in the name just above the river Irelel, not far north of Haddon Merc. In the strip west of the Dragon Wall, from the southern border of Shinar to the Sea of Storms, there were only 4, all newfound, as the Ogier considered it, meaning the youngest. Tsofu had had Ogier back for 6,000 years, and none of the others for more than 1,000. Some of the locations were as big a surprise as the borderlands, such as the Mountains of Mist, which had 6, and the Shadow Coast. The Black Hills were included, and the forests above the River Ivo, and the mountains above the River Dagon, just north of Arad Daman. Sadder was the list of steading abandoned, given up because the numbers there had grown too few. The Spine of the World and the Mountains of Mist and the Shadow Coast were in that list, too.
And so was a steading deep on Almuth Plain, near the great forest called the Parish Swar, and one in the low mountains along the north of Tumon Head, facing the Arath Ocean. Perhaps saddest was the one marked on the very edge of the Blight in Arafel. Murdral might be reluctant to enter a steading, but as the Blight marched south year by year, it swept over everything. Pausing, Hammond said sadly,
"Cheron-Lu was swallowed by the Great Blight 1,843 years ago, and Chandar 968.
May their memories flourish and flower in the light,"
Kovril and Aerith murmured together. "I know of one you didn't mark," Rand said. Perrin had told him of sheltering in it once. He pulled out a map of Andor, east of the river Aranel, and touched a spot well above the road from Camelin to Whitebridge. It was close enough. Hammond grimaced, almost a snarl.
"Where Hawkwing City was to be, that was never reclaimed. Several steading were found and never reclaimed. We try to stay away from the lands of men as much as possible."
All of the marks were in rugged mountains, in places men found hard to enter, or in a few cases, just far from any human habitation. Steading Tsofu lay far closer than any other to where humans dwelled, and even then Rand knew it was a full day to the nearest village.
"This would be a fine discussion another time,"
Kovril said, directing her words to Rand, yet plainly meaning them for Hammond, as her sidelong looks indicated.
"But I want to make as far west as I can before nightfall."
Hammond sighed heavily. "Surely you'll stay here a while," Rand protested. "You must be exhausted, walking all the way from Kyrian."
"Women do not become exhausted," Hammond said. "They only exhaust others. That is a very old saying among us."
Kovril and Aerith sniffed in harmony. Muttering to himself, Hammond went on with his listing, but now it was cities that the Ogier had built. Cities where the groves had been, each grove holding its waygate to carry Ogier back and forth to the steading without passing through the so often troubled lands of men. Camelin he marked, of course, and Tar Valon, Tyr and Ilion, Kyrian and Maradan, and Ebudar. That was the end as far as cities that still existed were concerned. Ebudar, he wrote, was Barashta. Perhaps Barashta belonged with the others in a way, with the dots made in places where the map showed nothing but a village, if that. Mafalda Daranel, and Kohima, and Londaran Kor, of course, and Manetheran. Aren Mador, Aridol, Shamemal, Derenbar, Braem, Kondaris, Ayakoramon, Aimon. As that list grew, Rand began to see damp spots on each map when Hammond was done. It took him a moment to realize that the Ogier Elder was weeping silently, letting the tears fall as he marked cities dead and forgotten. Perhaps he wept for the people, perhaps for the memories. The one thing Rand could be sure of was that it was not for the cities themselves, not for the lost works of Ogier masons. To the Ogier, stonework was only something they had picked up during the exile, and what work in stone could compare with the majesty of trees? One of those names more than tugged at Rand's memories, and its location as well, east of Berlon, several days above Whitebridge on the Aranel. "There was a grove here," he said, fingering the mark.
"At Aridhol?"
Hammond said.
"Yes. Yes, there was. A sad business, that."
Rand did not raise his head. "In Shadar Logoth," he corrected. "A very sad business. Would you show me that waygate if I took you there?"